The unsurpassed, penetrating, and perfect truth is seldom met with, even in 100,000 myriad kalpas. Now we can see and hear it. We can remember and accept it. I vow to make the Buddha's truth one with myself. Homage to the Buddha, homage to the Dharma, homage to the Sangha. So I decided to talk about loving kindness today. And as probably a lot of you know, metta or loving kindness is one of the four Brahma Viharas. And they're also called the four immeasurables or the four divine abodes. It's a little too high for me to see. And the other three are karuna or compassion, mudita, which is sympathetic joy, and upekkha, which is equanimity. And the four Brahma Viharas were taught by the Buddha. It's what opens our heart. They are, along with all the other things we're taught, you know, we have the four wisdoms and we have the six paramitas and we have all kinds of things. But along with all that, they are our natural state. They are what the Buddha mind is. If you, because they just arise naturally at times. And we can cultivate them, but they also arise naturally when we start letting go of the self. It's the self that gets in the way of knowing our true nature and acting from these wonderful virtues, I guess I'll call them. So in our true essence, with the self let go of, we are naturally kind, compassionate towards all beings, rejoice in others' happiness, and have evenness of mind. So it's something to look forward to. Or maybe you are already enjoying these things already. But I'm going to actually read something from an article by Ajahn Susita, which is called The Practice of the Four Paramitas. And I'm going to read the section on metta, loving kindness, which he talks of in terms of non-aversion. So aversion, when we have aversion towards anything within ourselves, or aversion towards anything outside of ourselves, other people, or aversion to conditions, we tighten up and we contract and we close the heart. When we can learn to relax into that, then you open the heart. And he says, these are the states of mind that transcend our normal mindset, but are actually our true mind. Aversion hems us in. The Brahma Viharas are our primary means of getting past these limitations. Now, we don't talk, generally, we don't talk about these practices as part of our tradition, the Mahayana tradition. We have the four wisdoms. I mean, but obviously they are part of it. I mean, it's part of the Buddha nature. But some traditions actively practice loving kindness by first offering loving kindness towards yourself. May I be happy. May I be free from suffering. May I have what I need. And then you, once you can offer it towards yourself and can really feel that loving kindness going towards yourself, then you offer it to people you love, your family, teachers who have helped you along the way. Then you offer it to people you're indifferent to. and then you offer it to people that you do not like very much. And I remember I was talking to someone, doing spiritual counseling with someone many years ago, and I think he was having a lot of trouble with people at work. He said they weren't like him, and he had a great difficulty with them. So I suggested him doing this practice of loving kindness. And he and his wife would do it every day. And and the last one is not just people you dislike, but your enemies. And he said after doing it for a while, there were no enemies. And so that practice can work. And we do have to start with ourselves. That's very important. So I'm going to read you this section by Ajahn Susito. The Buddha described these things in characteristically negative terms. Loving kindness, for example, is non-aversion. We think, well, love is a nice thing to feel, and oodles of it is even better. Oodles and oodles, better yet. Love can be seen as a really bubbly, sweet state. But non-aversion is more like saying, well, I've known you all this time and there's no aspect of you that I'm averse to. You might get a response such as, well, thanks a lot. We like to think of metta as that sweet taste rather than non-aversion. But not to move in distaste or fear around any aspect of oneself or another, any bodily aspect or mental state or behavior is more profound. Non-aversion is really something. It indicates what doesn't happen, how the mind doesn't contract. This is a more accurate description of metta. Love is a terribly overused and exhausted word. You can love everything from French fries to automobiles. It's like sugar. We just throw it on everything. But what we actually want to cultivate is the capacity to acknowledge aversion. Of not wanting this and feeling uneasy or tense about that, and to relax out of it. We don't have to think everything is great. We just have to keep from stiffening up and pushing things away. That's non-aversion. The heart is larger. The aim of the Brahmaviharas is to arrive at a place of serenity rather than bubbly enthusiasm. Developing this capacity involves seeing the difference between an object and our response to it. Things are not essentially detestable. Something in us picks up what we dislike. The more we rest in the understanding of the ephemeral and signless nature of things, the more we realize that all signs are put there by us, not consciously by the karmic patterns of the mind. This is not something we do deliberately. We may even feel helpless to respond in a different way. I can't help but dislike spiders. I just can't stand them. Our karmic proclivities lock on to a particular response, and we often feel that we can't do anything about that, but we can. We can begin to recognize the object and notice that the aversion to the object is not the object. That's another layer of experience that's put on the object, or the person, or the state, or the experience. That's a behavior. It's a mental behavior. And while preparing this talk, I started working on this. And when I run into someone who I might be having a problem with, or might bring up something in me that I don't like to see in myself, I could see this contraction. I could see myself pulling away and closing up. And so I tried not to do that. And it was good. It was good because then I wasn't closing my heart to that person and I wasn't closing my heart to myself. I was allowing what would arise in that situation to arise. But what then happened was, the first day I was working on the talk, I was able to do this all day, and I thought, oh, this is great. This talk is really teaching, you know, preparing this talk is really teaching me something. But then the next day, I couldn't do it at all. And and then I started judging myself. How can I give this talk if I can't practice it myself? But then I had to look at that and kind of laugh and say, well, that's what the talk is teaching you, to be kind to yourself and to accept whatever state you are in. So this was what the state I was in. I was not able to do this that day, and I just accepted it, and that helped a lot. So preparing these talks can be incredibly helpful for those of us who are preparing them. So I'll go back to this. We can also have really dark impressions of ourselves that are unnecessary, unskillful, and useless. True, sometimes we feel helpless in relation to our patterns of mind, our habits, our karma. But then we get depressed. How is that helpful? And it can be exacerbated further by the fact that we criticize ourselves for the depression. Can you see how convoluted it can all become? So non-aversion has to include not disrespecting our self-image. And that might entail being more realistic about our own bodies and minds. How good do you have to get before you'll stop criticizing yourself? I love that line. It's only when that stops that you can have the space and the resources to allow and support change in yourself. As the practice matures, we begin to separate the experience of immediate contact from the response. We see the two as distinct, and we see that the response, the reaction, the behavior, the thing we are adding on takes effort. That behavior is an enacted thing. You don't find yourself in a relaxed state of hatred. You're charged up. The mind is engaged, activated. And through this process of developing meditation, you can feel that activation, that change. You can feel energy, you can feel effort, and you can also put it down. You can begin to relax at involuntary effort. One of the trainings in meditation is learning how to make effort something that is voluntary and useful. We learn how to relax, how to step back, how to move forward, how to home in, and how to back off. We learn to recognize and to relax the effort that fuels aversion to things. That's non-aversion. And when you do this a little bit, interestingly enough, you begin to see the lovableness of things. Things in themselves are just what they are. They're rather wonderful because they are what they are. They're not there to annoy us or to delight us. They are what they are. There's a uniqueness that makes all things have a lovable character. And to love them means to let them be what they are. That's what loving is. Loving means permission, granting something the permission to be what it is, including yourself. That is love, rather than some sort of ebullient, is that? State. State. When you're not cutting out a part of yourself that you don't like, you're allowing the whole of your being to just be there, arising, the stuff arising and passing away. You're including everything within yourself in the embrace of the unborn. And you can see your heart open wider. When you're open to your difficulties and to your states of mind and to your imperfections, you open up to the unborn as well. One time, you know, I've had a lot of problems with anger. It's much better now, but it still comes up. But in the early days, I had a really huge problem with anger. And most people who are angry don't like the anger. And one time in meditation, I felt the anger embraced by loving kindness, and it kind of showed me that that's what our Buddha nature is. It embraces all aspects of ourselves and all aspects of other beings. And we touch on it from time to time. That has never come up since then. So it was a one-time thing for me. But other things have come up. And when you learn this non-aversion of not contracting when you run into someone you're having difficult with or brings up something in you, or you run into a situation, your heart opens wider. And when your heart opens wider, you can know more, understand more what the person is going through, and understand that they are no different from us. They just see things in a different way, or maybe are doing the very things that we don't like within ourselves. And we can open to that because the Buddha nature embraces all aspects of ourselves. Something was coming to mind, and what was it? Oh, I know. I used to have a problem with feeling like I wasn't a compassionate person, that there were people who were compassionate, and that's what they were like, and there were people like me who were uncompassionate, and that's what I was like, and I also felt that I was very hard of heart. And I really didn't like this within myself. But as I continued my training, I saw that nobody is a compassionate person or a non-compassionate person or a hard person. That when we train and we let go of the self, the compassion arises naturally and the hardness gradually softens. And because this had been a koan for me for many years, I remember when a couple of monks many, many years ago were talking about this practitioner that they went to see and how unkind the person was and how hard they were and how uncompassionate they were. And I felt such deep compassion for that person because I know how painful it is to be hard of heart. And it's just a way of protecting ourselves from suffering. So I think, I mean, I can't say this for sure, but I think people harden their hearts and act in certain ways because they're suffering and they're trying, and beings try not to suffer. It's part of us. We try not to suffer. We try and find all kinds of different ways out of suffering. And I also find for myself that sometimes compassion arises and sometimes it doesn't. And, you know, I can read something on the Transfer of Merit board or hear something, read something on the news or hear about some tragic event. And sometimes I'm really moved to compassion and sometimes I'm not. And I wonder why, you know, but it just is what it is. And there's a saying in Buddhism, sometimes I raise the eyebrows of Shakyamuni Buddha and sometimes I don't. Sometimes we may feel compassionate and sometimes we don't. And we have to be compassionate to ourselves because we're learning how to practice loving kindness towards ourselves. So we can cultivate loving kindness by the practice of non-aversion and by letting go of the self, especially letting go of judgments. And the only way I know how to do this is you can't shut off any of these things. Judgments will arise, the critical mind will arise, but we try not to feed it by letting it come and letting it go as we can. Nothing is permanent, so whatever arises is not our true nature. We all know suffering to one degree or other. In the practice of non-aversion, we can change our relationship to that suffering by allowing it to be there without adding judgment to it. And we can think we're doing this, but in actual fact, we're enduring the suffering, just waiting for it to go away, or trying to push it away, or hoping it will go away quickly. And it takes a bit more than that. It takes actually loving it, turning the stream of compassion within and turning our loving kindness to that suffering, to that aspect of ourselves that we don't like. And it's very interesting when you do that. It usually shifts into something else that is going on underneath it. That's what I find anyway. But we don't want to stay too focused on the suffering. So we allow it to be there, we love it, but if we stay too focused on it, we forget about the rest of the world. It's just me and my suffering. And we can get like that. When I was first here, I would say that in every aspect of my life, I was selfish. All I cared about was my own suffering and how I could get rid of it, how I could transcend it. And since this was a religion of compassion, why weren't people being more compassionate to me? I really had these thoughts. And people would tell me, you know, you're suffering deeply, but the way out of it is to be generous, to not think just about yourself, but to be generous to other people. And I just thought, I can't do that. I feel so miserable. I can't be kind to other people. But, you know, it changed. So training does work. And it was actually, I think, one of the real factors that changed this for me was being the guest master. Because I saw the suffering of other beings who were coming through the gate. And I knew it was my responsibility to be respectful and kind to everybody who came through the gate and to do the best I could with these people. And it really opened my heart to their suffering. And I'm really grateful for having been guest master, because it showed me a lot. And I think it really turned my life around there. You know, I've been working on this for many, many years, but that really helped me to let go of a lot of my selfishness. Although sometimes I did get a bit overwhelmed and stressed and didn't do so well, but it really helped. So not focusing on ourselves, but putting the teaching into practice, by being kind, by being kind to other people, no matter how we feel. And it just feels right. It feels right to do this. When we act from how we're feeling or what people bring up in us, it creates suffering, and it just doesn't feel right. And Reverend Master Mahon stresses kindness to all beings. And of course the Buddha, you know, he was compassionate to all beings. He didn't, I didn't know him, but from his teachings, he didn't discriminate. When someone came to him, he helped them. And I see people doing this here. I see the lay people and I see monks. I'm really in awe of people who can just treat everybody with kindness. I have such a critical mind, and I've been working on it for many, many years, but I don't see that I have mastered this aspect of my training, but I'm still trying. And I'd like to give you an example of focusing on our suffering so much that we don't see that there's something bigger than our suffering. That our suffering is just something that comes and goes, and that there's something much bigger than that. And I'll give you an example of from my own training of I was doing a retreat on my own. Rev. Master Jiyu gave me permission to do this. And I was just really suffering deeply. And it was just going on and on. And I had a pet rat. And a number of us had pet rats at that time. And once you get over kind of your aversion to what you've always learned about rats, you see that they are very loving beings. And my rat was sitting on his on the top of his cage, because I let him out. He could roam around. And I looked up at him, and he was radiating pure love. And I can still feel that, because it turned my heart around, and everything shifted. And I came over here, and I meditated in front of the Founder Shrine, and just... it was like the bigger picture took over. And the suffering was just something that comes and goes. And I could see that it wasn't the true reality. And I thought, well, this is it. This is my life from now on. This is wonderful. And of course, the next day, as most of you have learned by now, you're back to yourself. And there it is, all the same stuff. But you've been given this opportunity to see that there is something different. And this practice of loving kindness is really helped by letting go of the self and having the thoughts, feelings, views, our own self-importance lose their importance. And this happens as we train. At first, everything we think and feel is who we are and what we act from. And through this practice, we start seeing it, it kind of loses its reality. Sometimes it can come on really strong, but something in you knows that you don't want to act on it anymore. So this happens as we continue to train. I'd like to read something from this little book called Step by Step. I don't know if any of you are familiar with it, but it's a little essays by Mahagosananda. And Mahagosananda was elected the Supreme Patriarch of Cambodian Buddhism after the many years of horror and destruction and cruelty by the Khmer Rouge in Cambodia. And I don't know if you're all aware of that. There was a movie out called The Killing Fields, which really portrayed it. He was an example of someone radiating loving kindness and helping the people of Cambodia to let go of their hatred and practice loving kindness. So he was a remarkable person. I think some of our monks met him once at a conference. But I want to read a couple of things because I was actually planning to do a talk on something else, and I was looking in here to see if I could find an example, and I read something, and I thought, oh, that's what I got to talk about, loving kindness. So this is in the introduction, this one section, and then I'll read something he says. Much of the world is asking, right to allow the Khmer Rouge to participate in an interim government. After years of witnessing the suffering of so many, Mahagosananda is still able to offer a serene smile and say, "We must have both wisdom and compassion. We condemn the act, but we cannot hate the actor. With our love, we will do everything we can to assure peace for all. There is no other way." And the Buddha taught that hatred never ceases by hatred. Only by loving kindness, I'm sure I have this wrong, but only by loving kindness does hatred cease. So here's the thing. Who is the enemy? In 1981, the United Nations held a conference to discuss the future of Cambodia. During that time, we held a Buddhist ceremony for peace. At the end of the ceremony, a Khmer Rouge leader came up to me very cautiously and asked if I would come to Thailand to build a temple at the border. I said that I would. "Oh," thought many people, "he is talking to the enemy. He is helping the enemy. How can he do that?" I reminded them that love embraces all beings, whether they are noble-minded or low-minded, good or evil. Both the noble and the good are embraced because loving kindness flows to them spontaneously. The unwholesome-minded must be included because they are the ones who need loving kindness the most. In many of them, the seed of goodness may have died because warmth was lacking for its growth. It perished from coldness in a world without compassion. Gandhi said that he was always ready to compromise. He said, "Behind my non-cooperation, there is always the keenest desire to cooperate, on the slightest pretext, even with the worst of opponents. To me, a very imperfect mortal is ever in need of God's grace, ever in need of the Dharma. No one is beyond redemption." I do not question that loving one's oppressors, Cambodians loving the Khmer Rouge, may be the most difficult attitude to achieve, but it is a law of the universe that retaliation, hatred, and revenge only continue the cycle and never stop it. Reconciliation does not mean that we surrender rights and conditions, but rather that we use love in all our negotiations. It means that we see ourselves in the opponent. For what is the opponent but a being in ignorance? And we ourselves are also ignorant of many things. Therefore, only loving kindness and right mindfulness can free us. Gandhi said, "The more you develop ahimsa," and I looked this up, ahimsa is the principle of nonviolence towards all living things. And another definition said, ahimsa is the total and complete absence of violence from one's mind, body, and spirit. Okay. The more you develop ahimsa in your being, the more infectious it becomes until it overwhelms your surroundings, and by, it might oversweep this world. We are each individually responsible for our own salvation and our own happiness. Through our service, we find a road to salvation. The service is nothing but our love for all beings and the uplifting of ignorance into light. No matter what is going on in the world, the universe is benevolent. And under dire circumstances, our hearts are often moved by compassion. Our hearts are benevolent. And you can see this in the world. People are awakened to compassion and kindness and are helping each other. And there's a lot of very difficult things going on in the world now. And there's a lot of good going on as well. Reverend Master Koten started sending around to people on his email list and also put on his website something called an affirming flame. So there's affirming flame, affirming flame 2, affirming flame 3, affirming flame 4, and then there is reaffirming flame. So... and it's all these stories about to really cheer us up about humanity. And so I was looking at some of them this morning to see if I could talk about one of them at this Dharma talk, and I was really moved by this one that I had seen before. But it's about a someone from Pakistan who has a restaurant. I think it's in Washington, D.C., or maybe it was Washington State, I can't remember which. But at any rate, he had lived in Pakistan, and he had 8 or 9 siblings. And I think they were very poor, and although his family was, it sounded like his family was a good family, but it was a big struggle surviving. And he finally borrowed some money to come to the U.S., and he had $3 to his name. So I imagine he might have been homeless at the time. He got a job, $3 an hour, at a gas station. He finally earned enough money to buy one limousine. He started driving the rich around until he had enough money to have a whole fleet of limousines, and he made enough money to open a restaurant in which he served Pakistani food, and he loved to cook, but he especially loved to cook for the homeless. And he reminds me, he's got such a loving face. It's not just feeding the homeless, but it's loving them and respecting them and caring about them. And it reminds me of Mother Teresa, whose gift was not just to care for these people, but to see all these people as human beings. For someone who is rejected by society, to have someone look at you with loving kindness and accept you just for what you are can have a remarkable impact on a person. And you could see the homeless. I mean, they were bright and smiling in this restaurant, and he was loving them. I mean, not in a gooey kind of way, but just he really loved to feed the homeless. And he treated them with such kindness. So I think they could come for lunch every day. And he also cooked again on Sundays and brought it to one of these places that feed the homeless. And someone asked him, and this was a fancy restaurant that he had, you know, it was a really nice restaurant. And someone asked him, well, if you keep giving away all this food, you know, you may lose all your client, you know, your clientele, and you may lose all your money. And he said, the more he gives away, the more God will bless him. And his mother had told him, holding tightly to his faith in the face of despair. Oh, she said, hold tightly to your faith in the face of despair. If you share when you don't have, God will take care of you from darkness to light. God will take you from darkness to light. And some of the homeless people were talking, and they said, you know, now I have hope. You know, I recommend you go to Rev. Master Khotan's website and look up this this little YouTube video. It's really remarkable. At any rate, so I would say there's hope in our world. There's a lot of people helping others. And there's stories of, there was a story of a synagogue and a mosque that were right next door to each other. And there was a Syrian woman who wanted to bring 8 members of her family to this country. And the leaders of the synagogue and the mosque got together and started working together to make this happen. And they got furniture, they got donations, and they made it happen. It's incredible. There's all kinds of stories like this. So I'd like to end with reading one last thing by Mahagosananda on loving kindness. No boundaries to loving kindness. There is nothing more glorious than peace. When we stabilize our posture and calm our mind, we can realize peace within ourselves. Then we can radiate loving kindness to those around us, our family, our community, our nation, and the whole world. We can meditate like this. May I be happy. May I be peaceful. May I be free from anger. May I be free from suffering. Why must we love ourselves first? Because peace begins with the individual. It is only by loving ourselves first that we are able to extend love to others. Charity begins at home. By protecting ourselves, we protect the whole world. By loving ourselves, we love the whole world. When we say, "May I be happy," we are speaking for everyone. The whole world is one. Life is one. We are all of the same Buddha nature. Loving kindness is a very powerful energy. It radiates to all beings without distinction. It radiates to our loved ones, to those toward whom we feel indifferent, and to our enemies. There are no boundaries to loving kindness. The Dharma is founded in loving kindness. The Buddha saw the whole world with compassion. And so our prayer for personal happiness naturally grows into a prayer for everyone. May the whole world be happy and free from suffering. Thank you.